eyes gleamed. You think I don't know why you've pushed even Elaine away? Nesta didn't want to talk about it, about the fact that it had always been her and Elaine, and now somehow it had become Feyre and Elaine instead. Elaine had chosen Feyre and these people and left her behind. Amryn had done the same. She'd made it clear on the barge. Nesta didn't care that during the war with Highburn, her own tentative bond had formed with Feyre, forged over common goals. Protect Elaine, save the human lands. They were excuses, Nesta had realized, to paper over what now boiled and raged in her heart. Nesta didn't bother replying, and Feyre didn't speak again as she departed. There was nothing to bind them together anymore. Chapter 3. Cassian watched Rhysand carefully stir his tea. He'd seen Rhys slice up their enemies with the same cold precision that he was now using with that spoon. They sat in the High Lord's study, illuminated by the light of green glass lamps and a heavy iron chandelier. The two-level atrium occupied the northern end of the business wing, as Feyre called it. There was the main floor of the study, bedecked in the hand-knotted blue carpets that Feyre had gone to Cesaire to select from its artisans, with its two sitting areas, Rhys's desk, and twin long tables near the bookshelves. At the far end of the room, a little dais led into a broad raised alcove, flanked by more books, and in its center, a massive working model of their world, the stars and planets around it, and some other fancy things that had been explained to Cassian once before he deemed them boring and proceeded to ignore them completely. Az, of course, had been fascinated. Rhys had built the model himself centuries ago. It could not only track the sun, but also tell time, and it somehow allowed Rhys to ponder the existence of life beyond their own world, and other things Cassian had again instantly forgotten. On the mezzanine, accessible by an ornate wrought iron spiral staircase just to the left when one walked in, were more books, thousands in this space alone. A few glass cabinets full of delicate objects that Cassian stayed away from, for fear of breaking them with his bare paws, as Moore described his hands, and several of Feyre's paintings. There were plenty of those on the bottom level, too, some in shadow and meant to stay that way, some revealed by the streaming light reflecting off the river at the foot of the sloping lawn. Cassian's High Lady had a way of capturing the world that always made him pause. Her paintings sometimes unsettled him. The truths she portrayed weren't always pleasant ones. He'd gone to her studio a few times to watch her paint. Surprisingly, she had let him. The first time he'd visited, he'd found Feyre tense at her easel. She was painting what he recognized was an emaciated ribcage, so thin he could count most of the bones. When he spotted a familiar birthmark on the too thin left arm beside it, he eyed the same mark amid the tattoo on her own extended arm, brush in hand. He merely nodded to her, an acknowledgement that he understood. He had never been as thin as Feyre during his own years of poverty, but he understood the hunger in each brushstroke, the desperation, the hollow, empty feeling that felt like those grays and blues and pale sickly white, the despair of the black pit behind that torso and arm, death hovering close like a crow awaiting carrion. He'd thought about that painting a great deal in the days afterward, how it had made him feel, how close they'd all come to losing their High Lady before they'd ever met her. Rhys finished stirring his tea and set down his spoon with terrible gentleness. Cassian raised his eyes to the portrait behind his High Lord's mammoth desk. The golden fairy light orbs in the room were positioned to make it seem alive, glowing. Feyre's face, a self-portrait, seemed to laugh at him, at the mate whose back was to her, so she could watch over him, Rhys said. Cassian prayed that the gods were watching over him as Rhys sipped from his tea and said,
"You're ready?"
He leaned back in his seat.
"I've gotten young warriors in line before."
Rhys's violet eyes glowed.
"Nesta's not some young buck pushing the boundaries. I can handle her."
Rhys stared at his tea. Cassian recognized that face, that serious, unnervingly calm face.
"You did good work getting the Illyrians back in order this spring, you know."
He braced himself. He'd been anticipating this talk since he'd spent 4 months with the Illyrians, soothing the jagged edges amongst the war bands, making sure the families who'd lost fathers and sons and brothers and husbands were taken care of, that they knew he was there to help and to listen, and generally making it very fucking clear that if they rose up against Rhys, there would be hell to pay. The blood rite last spring had taken care of the worst of them, including the troublemaker Callan, whose arrogance hadn't been enough to compensate for his shoddy training when he'd been slain just miles from the slopes of Ramiel. That Cassian had heaved a sigh of relief at the news of the young male's demise had lingered with him, but the Illyrians had stopped their grumbling soon after. And Cassian had spent the time since then rebuilding their ranks, overseeing the training of promising new warriors, and making sure the seasoned ones were still in good enough shape to fight again. Replenishing their depleted numbers had at least given the Illyrians something to focus on, and Cassian knew there was little he could add any more beyond the occasional inspection and council meeting. So the Illyrians were at peace. Or as peaceful as a warrior society could be with their constant training. Which was what Rhys wanted. Not just because a rebellion would be a disaster, but because of this. What he knew Rhys was about to say.
"I think it's time for you to take on bigger responsibilities."
Cassian grimaced. There it was. Rhys chuckled.
"You can't honestly mean to tell me you didn't know the Illyrian situation was a test."
"I'd hoped not," he grumbled, tucking in his wings.
Rhys smirked, though he quickly sobered.
"Nesta is not a test, though. She's different."
"I know."
Even before she'd been made, he'd seen it. And after that terrible day in Highburn, he'd never forgotten the bone carver's whispered words in the prison. "What if I tell you what the rock and darkness and sea beyond whispered to me, Lord of Bloodshed? How they shuddered in fear on that island across the sea, how they trembled when she emerged, how she took something, something precious. She ripped it out with her teeth. What did you wake that day in Highburn, Prince of Bastards?" That final question had chased him from slumber more nights than he cared to admit. Cassian made himself say,
"We haven't seen a hint of her power since the war. For all we know, it vanished with the cauldron's breaking. Or maybe it's dormant, as the cauldron is now asleep and safely hidden in Cretea, with Draken and Miriam. Her power could rise at any moment."
A chill skittered down Cassian's spine. He trusted the Seraphim prince and the half-human woman to keep the cauldron concealed. But there would be nothing they or anyone could do to control its power if awoken.
Rhys said, "Be on your guard."
"You sound like you're afraid of her."
"I am."
Cassian blinked.
Rhys lifted a brow. "Why do you think I sent you to get her this morning?"
Cassian shook his head, unable to help his laugh. Rhys smiled, lacing his fingers behind his head and leaning back in his seat.
"You need to get out in the practice ring more, brother,"
Cassian told him, surveying his friend's powerful body.
"Don't want that mate of yours to find any soft bits."
"She never finds any soft bits when I'm around her," Rhys said,
and Cassian laughed again,
Is Feyre gonna kick your ass for what you said earlier?
I already told the servants to clear out for the rest of the day as soon as you take Nesta up to the house.
I think the servants hear you fighting plenty.
Indeed, Feyre had no hesitation when it came to telling Rhys that he'd stepped out of line. Rhys threw him a wicked smile.
It's not the fighting I don't want them hearing.
Cassian grinned right back, even as something like jealousy tugged on his gut. He didn't begrudge them their happiness, not at all. There were plenty of times when he'd see the joy on Rhys's face and have to walk away to keep from weeping, because his brother had waited for that love, earned it. Rhys had gone to the mat again and again to fight for that future with Feyre. For this. But sometimes Cassian saw that mating ring and the portrait behind the desk and this house and just wanted. The clock chimed 10:30 and Cassian rose.
Enjoy your not fighting. Cassian.
The tone stopped him. Rhys's face was carefully calm.
You didn't ask what bigger responsibilities I have in mind for you. I assumed Nesta was big enough, he hedged.
Rhys gave him a knowing look.
You could be more.
I'm your general. Isn't that enough?
Is it enough for you?
Yes, he almost said, but found himself hesitating.
Oh. You're certainly hesitating, Rhys said.
Cassian tried to snap up his mental shields, but found they were intact. Rhys was smiling like a cat.
You still reveal everything on that face of yours, brother,
Rhys crooned, but his amusement swiftly faded.
Az and I have good reason to believe that the human queens are scheming again. I need you to look into it, deal with it.
What, we're doing some role reversal? Az gets to lead the Illyrians now?
Don't play stupid,
Rhys said coolly. Cassian rolled his eyes, but they both knew Azriel would sooner disband and destroy Illyria than help it. Convincing their brother that the Illyrians were a people worth saving was still a battle amongst the three of them.
Rhys went on. Azriel is juggling more than he'll admit right now. I'm not dumping another responsibility on him. This task of yours will help him.
Rhys flashed a challenging smile.
And let us all see what you're really made of.
You want me to play spy?
There are other ways to glean information, Cass, besides peeking through keyholes. Az isn't a courtier. He works from the shadows. But I need someone, I need you, standing in the open. Moore can fill you in on the details. She'll be back from Valahan at some point today.
I'm no courtier either. You know that.
The thought made his stomach churn.
Scared?
Cassian let the siphons atop the backs of his hands shimmer with inner fire.
So, I'm to deal with these queens as well as train Nesta?
Rhys leaned back, his silence confirmation. Cassian strode toward the shut double doors, reining in a string of curses.
We're in for a long few months, then.
He was almost to the door when Rhys said quietly,
You certainly are.
Did you keep those fighting leathers from the war?
Cassian said to Nesta by way of greeting as he stalked into the entry hall.
You'll need them tomorrow.
I made sure Elaine packed them for her,
Feyre replied from her perch on the stairs, not looking at her stiff-backed sister standing at their base. He wondered if his high lady had noticed the disappearing servants yet. The secret smile in Feyre's eyes told him she knew plenty about it and what was coming for her in a few minutes.
Thank the gods he was getting out of here. He'd probably have to fly to the sea itself not to hear Rhys, or feel his power when he...
Cassian stopped himself before he could finish the thought. He and his brothers had put a good deal of distance between the stupid youths they'd been, fucking any female who showed interest, often in the same room as each other, and the males they were now. He wanted to keep it that way. Nesta just crossed her arms.
Are you winnowing us up to the house?
He asked Feyre. As if in answer, Moore said from behind him,
I am.
She winked at Feyre.
She's got a special meeting with Reese.
Cassian grinned as Moore strode in from the residential wing.
I thought you wouldn't be back until later today.
He threw open his arms, folding her against his chest and squeezing tight. Moore's waist-length golden hair smelled of cold seas. She squeezed him back.
I didn't feel like waiting until the afternoon. Valahan is already knee-deep in snow. I needed some sunshine.
Cassian pulled away to scan her beautiful face, as familiar to him as his own. Her brown eyes were shadowed despite her words.
What's wrong?
Feyre rose from her seat, noting the strain as well.
Nothing, Moore said, flipping her hair over a shoulder.
Liar.
I'll tell you all later, Moore conceded, and looked toward Nesta. You should wear the leathers tomorrow, when you train up at Windhaven. You'll want them against the cold.
Nesta leveled a bored, icy look at Moore. Moore just beamed at her in return. Feyre took that as a good moment to casually step between them, Reese's shield still hard as steel around her. Never mind that they'd all be real damn close in about a minute. Today we'll get you settled at the house. You can unpack your things. Get some rest if you want.
Nesta said nothing. Cassian dragged a hand through his hair. Cauldron spare them.
Reese expected him to play politics when he couldn't even navigate this? Moore smirked, as if reading the thought on his face.
Congratulations on your promotion. She shook her head. Cassian the courtier. I never thought I'd see the day.
Feyre snickered, but Nesta's eyes slid to him, surprised and wary. He said to her, if only to beat her to it,
still a bastard born nobody. Don't worry.
Nesta's lips thinned. Feyre said carefully to Nesta,
we'll talk soon.
Nesta again didn't reply. It seemed she had stopped speaking to Feyre at all, but at least she was going willingly. Semi-willingly.
Shall we? Moore said, offering up either elbow.
Nesta gazed at the floor, her face pale and gaunt, eyes blazing. Feyre met his stare. The look alone conveyed everything she was begging of him. Nesta stepped past her, grabbed Moore's forearm, and watched a spot on the wall. Moore cringed at him, but Cassian didn't dare shake the look. Nesta might not be gazing at them, but he knew she saw and heard and assessed everything. So he merely took Moore's other arm and winked at Feyre before they all vanished into wind and darkness. Moore winnowed them into the sky right above the House of Wind. Before the stomach-dropping plunge could register, Nesta was in Cassian's arms, his wings spread as he flew toward the stone veranda. It had been a long while since she'd been held by him, since she'd seen the city so small below. He could have flown them both up here, Nesta realized as he alighted, and Morgan vanished from her deadly plummet with a wave. The rules of the house were simple. No one could winnow directly inside, thanks to its heavy wards, so it was a choice to either walk up the 10,000 steps, winnow and drop a terrifying distance to the veranda, likely breaking bones, or winnow to the edge of the wards with someone who had wings to fly the rest of the way in. But being in Cassian's arms... She'd rather have risked breaking every bone in her body from the plunge to the veranda. Thankfully, the flight was over in a matter of seconds. Nesta shoved out of his grip the moment her feet hit the worn stones. Cassian let her,
folding his wings and lingering by the rail, all of Valaris glittering below and beyond him. She'd spent weeks here last year, during that terrible period after being turned Fey, begging Elaine to demonstrate any sign of wanting to live. She'd barely slept for fear of Elaine walking off this veranda, or leaning too far out of one of the countless windows, or simply throwing herself down those 10,000 stairs. Her throat closed at the surge of memories, and at the sprawling view, the glimmering ribbon of the Sidra far below, the red stoned palace built into the side of the flat-topped mountain itself. Nesta dug her hands into her pockets, wishing she'd opted for the warm gloves Feyre had coaxed her to take. She'd refused. Or silently refused, since she had not uttered a word to her sister after they'd left the study. Partially because she was afraid of what would come out. For a long moment, Nesta and Cassian watched each other. The wind ripped at his shoulder-length dark hair, but he might have been standing in a summer field for all the reaction he yielded to the cold. So much sharper up here, high above the city. It was all she could do to keep her teeth from chattering their way out of her skull. Cassian finally said, "You'll be staying in your old room," as if she had any sort of claim on this place, on anywhere at all. He went on, "My room's a level above that." "Why would I need to know that?" The words snapped out of her. He began walking toward the glass doors that led into the mountain's interior. "In case you have a bad dream and need someone to read you a story," he drawled, a half smile dancing on his face. "Maybe one of those smutty books you like so much." Her nostrils flared, but she walked through the door he held open for her, nearly sighing at the cozy warmth filling the red stone halls. Her new residence, sleeping site. It wasn't a home, this place, just as her apartment hadn't been a home. Neither had her father's fancy new house, before Highburn had half destroyed it. And neither had the cottage, or the glorious manor before that. Home was a foreign word. But she knew this level of the House of Wind well. The dining room to the left, and the stairway to her right that would take her down two levels to her floor, and the kitchens a level below that. The library far, far beneath it. She wouldn't have cared where she stayed, except for the convenience of the small private library, also on her level, which had been the place where she'd discovered those smutty books, as Cassian called them. She'd devoured a few dozen of them during those weeks she'd first been here, desperate for any lifeline to keep her from falling apart, from bellowing at what had been done to her body, her life, to Elaine. Elaine, who would not eat or speak or do anything at all. Elaine, who had somehow become the adjusted one. In the months leading to and during the war, Nesta had managed, had stepped into this world with these people and started to see it, a future. Until she'd been hunted by the King of Highburn and the Cauldron, until she'd realized that everyone she cared for would be used to hurt her, break her, trap her, until that last battle when she couldn't stop 1,000 Illyrians from dying and had instead been able to save only one. Him. She would do it again if forced to, and knowing that, she couldn't bear that truth either. Cassian aimed for the downward stairs, his every movement brimming with unfaltering arrogance. "I don't need an escort to my room." No matter that his rooms were that way too. "I know how to get there." He threw a smirk over a muscled shoulder and strode down the stairs anyway.
"I just want to make sure you arrive in one piece before I settle in."
He nodded to the landing they passed, the open archway that led into the hall with his bedroom. She knew it only because she'd had little more to do during those initial weeks as High Fae than wander this palace like a ghost. Cassian added,
"As is in the room two doors down from mine."
They reached the level of her bedroom, and he swaggered along the hall.
You probably won't see him, though.
He's here to spy on me? Her words bounced off the red stone, Cassian said tightly.
He says he'd rather stay up here than at the river house. That made two of them.
Why?
I don't know. He's Az. He likes his space.
He shrugged, the fey light filtering through the golden sconces, gilding the taloned apex of his wings.
He'll keep to himself, so most of the time it'll be only you and me.
She didn't dare reply. Not to all that statement implied. Alone? With Cassian? Here? Cassian stopped in front of a familiar arched wood door. He leaned against the jamb, hazel eyes monitoring her every step. She knew the house belonged to Rhys, knew Cassian's entire existence was paid for by Rhys, just as the High Lord bankrolled all of his inner circle, knew that the fastest and deepest way to annoy Cassian, hurt him right now, would be to strike for that, to make him doubt the work he did and whether he deserved to be here. The instinct crept up, a rising wave, each word selected to slice and wound. She'd always had the gift, if it could be called that. Yet it wasn't a curse, not entirely. It had served her well. He scanned her face as she stopped in front of the bedroom door.
Let's hear it, Ness.
Don't call me that. She dangled the words like bait, let him think her vulnerable. But he pushed off the door, wings tucking in.
You need a hot meal.
I don't want one.
Why?
Because I'm not hungry. It was true. Her appetite had been the first thing to go after that battle. Only instinct and the occasional social requirement to appear like she gave a shit about anything kept her eating.
You won't last an hour of training tomorrow without food in your belly.
I'm not training at that horrible place. She'd hated Windhaven from the first time she'd seen it, cold and bleak, and full of humorless, harsh-faced people. The siphon strapped atop Cassian's left hand gleamed, a red band of light twining from the stone to wrap around the door handle. It yanked the iron downward, the door swinging open with a creak, then vanished like smoke.
You were given an order, as well as the alternative to following it. You want to go back to the human lands? Be my guest.
Then go somewhere else. He'd likely have that preening Morrigan dump her over the border like so much baggage. And Nesta would have called the bluff. Except she knew what she'd face down south. The war had done little to warm human sentiments toward the Fae. She had nowhere to go. Elaine, mourn as she might for the life she would have had with Grayson, had found a place, a role here. Tending to the gardens of Feyre's veritable palace on the river, helping other residents of Velaris restore their own destroyed gardens. She had purpose and joy and friends. Those two half-wraiths who worked in Rhysand's household. But those things had always come easily to her sister, had always made Elaine special, had made Nesta fight like hell to keep Elaine safe at all costs. The Cauldron had learned that. The King of Hybern had learned it too. An old heavy weight tugged her down, oblivion beckoning. I'm tired. Her words came out mercifully flat.
Take the day to rest then,
Cassian said, his voice a shade quiet.
Moore or Rhys will winnow us up to Windhaven after breakfast tomorrow.
She said nothing. He went on.
We'll start easy. 2 hours of training, then lunch, then you'll be brought back here to meet with Clotho.
She didn't have the energy to ask further about the training or the work in the library with its high priestess. She didn't really care. Let Rhysand and Feyre and Amran and Cassian make her do this bullshit. Let them think it could somehow make a lick of difference. Nesta didn't bother to reply before she strode through the archway and into her bedroom. But she felt his stare on her, assessing every step over the threshold, the way her hand gripped the side of the door,
the way she flexed her fingers before she slammed it shut. Nesta waited, mere feet inside the bedroom, blinking at the glaring light through the wall of windows at its other end. A scuff of boots on stone informed her that he'd left. It wasn't until the sound faded completely that she took in the room before her, unchanged since she'd last been in it. The connecting door to Elaine's old suite now sealed shut. The wide space easily accommodated a mammoth four-poster bed against the wall to her left, as well as a small sitting area to her right, complete with a sofa and two chairs. A carved marble fireplace occupied the wall before the sitting area, mercifully dark, and multiple rugs lay scattered throughout, offering reprieve from the chilly stone floors. But that wasn't what she'd liked about this room. No. It was what she now faced. The wall of windows that overlooked the city, the river, the flatlands, and distant sparkle of sea beyond. All that land, all those people, so far away, as if this palace floated in the clouds. There had been some days up here when the mist had been thick enough to block the view below, swirling so close to the window that she'd been able to trail her fingers through it. No tendrils of mist drifted by now, though. The windows revealed nothing but a clear early autumn day, the sunlight near blinding. Seconds ticked by, minutes. A familiar roaring built in her ears. That heavy hollowness tugged her down, as surely as some fairy creature wrapping its bony hands around her ankle and yanking her beneath a dark surface. As surely as she'd been shoved under that eternal icy water in the cauldron. Nesta's body became distant, foreign, as she shut the heavy gray velvet curtains against the light, shrouding the room in darkness bit by bit. She ignored the three bags and two trunks set beside the dresser as she approached the bed. She barely managed to toe off her shoes before she slid beneath the layers of white down blankets and quilts, closed her eyes, and breathed. Chapter 4. Moore had already commandeered a table at the Riverfront Cafe, an arm slung across the back of a wrought iron chair, the other elegantly draped over her crossed knees. Cassian halted a few feet from the maze of tables along the walkway, smiling to himself at the sight of her, head tipped toward the sun, unbound hair gleaming and rippling around her like liquid gold, her full lips curled upward, basking in the light. She never stopped appreciating the sunshine. Even 500 years after leaving that veritable prison she'd called home, and the monsters who claimed her as kin, his friend, his sister, honestly, still savored every moment in the sun, as if the first 17 years of her life, spent in the darkness of the hewn city, still lurked around her like Az's shadows. Cassian cleared his throat as he approached the table, offering pleasant smiles to the other patrons and people along the walkway, who either gawked or waved at him, and by the time he sat, Moore was already smirking, her brown eyes lit with amusement. "Don't start," he warned, settling his wings around the chair's back and motioning to the owner of the cafe, who knew him well enough to understand that meant he wanted water, no tea or sweets, both of which Moore had before her. Moore grinned, so beautiful it took his breath away. "Can't I enjoy the sight of my friend being fawned over by the public?" He rolled his eyes and murmured his thanks to the owner as a pitcher of water and a glass appeared before him. Moore said, when the owner had gone to tend to other tables, "I seem to remember a time when you enjoyed that sort of thing, too."
"I was a young, arrogant idiot." He cringed to recall how he'd strutted around after successful battles or missions, believing he deserved the praise of strangers.
for too damn long he'd indulged in that bullshit. It had taken walking these same streets after Reese had been imprisoned by Amarantha, after Reese sacrificed so much to shield this city, and seeing the disappointment and fear in so many faces, to make Cassian realize what a fool he'd been. Moore cleared her throat, as if sensing the direction of his thoughts. She didn't possess Reese's skill set, but having survived in the Court of Nightmares, she'd learned to read the subtlest of expressions. A mere blink, she'd once told him, might mean the difference between life and death in that miserable court.
"She's settled, then?"
Cassian knew who she meant.
"Taking a nap."
Moore snorted.
"Don't."
His attention drifting to the glittering Sidra mere feet away.
"Please don't."
Moore sipped her tea, the portrait of elegant innocence.
"We'd be better off throwing Nesta into the Court of Nightmares. She'd thrive there."
Cassian clenched his jaw, both at the insult and the truth.
"That's exactly the sort of existence we're trying to steer her away from."
Moore assessed him with a bob of her thick lashes.
"It pains you seeing her like this."
"All of it pains me."
He and Moore had always had this kind of relationship, truth at all costs, however harsh. Ever since that first and only time they'd slept together, when he'd learned too late that she'd hidden from him the terrible repercussions, when he'd seen her broken body and known that even if she'd lied to him, he'd still played a part. Cassian blew out a breath, shaking away the blood-soaked memory still straining his mind 5 centuries later.
"It pains me that Nesta has become this. It pains me that she and Feyre are always at each other's throats. It pains me that Feyre hurts over it. And I know Nesta does too. It pains me that..."
He drummed his fingers on the table, then sipped from his water.
"I really don't want to talk about it."
"All right."
The breeze ruffled the gauzy fabric of Moore's twilight blue dress. He again let himself admire her perfect face. Beyond the disastrous consequences for Moore after their night together, the fallout with Reese afterward had been awful. And Asriel had been so furious in his own quiet way that Cassian had quelled any further desire for Moore. Had let lust turn into affection, and all romantic feelings turn into familial bonds. But he could still admire her sheer beauty, as he'd admire any work of art, even though he knew well that what lay inside Moore was far more lovely and perfect than her exterior. He wondered if she knew that. Drinking again, he said, "Tell me what happened in Balahan." The ancient, mountainous fairy territory across the northern sea had been stirring since before the war with Hybern, and had been both enemy and ally to Prithian in different historical eras. What role Valahan's hot-tempered king and proud people would play in this new world of theirs was yet to be decided, though much of its fate seemed to depend upon Moore's now frequent presence at their court as Reese's emissary. Indeed, Moore's eyes shuddered.
"They don't want to sign the new treaty."
Fuck!
Reese, Feyre, and Amron had spent months working on that treaty, with input from their allies in other courts and territories. Helion, High Lord of the Day Court, and Reese's closest ally, had been the most involved. Helion Spellcleaver was unrivaled in sheer swaggering arrogance. He'd probably made up the moniker himself. But the male had 1,000 libraries at his disposal, and had put them all to good use for the treaty.
"I've spent weeks in that blasted court," Moore said, poking at the flaky pastry beside her teacup. "Freezing my ass off, trying to kiss their cold asses, and their king and queen refused the treaty. I came home on the earlier side today because I knew any more last-minute pushing from me would be unwelcome. My time there was supposed to be a friendly visit, after all."
"Why won't they sign it?"
"Because those stupid human queens are stirring. Their army still isn't disbanded. The Queen of Valahan even asked me what the point of a peace treaty would be when another war, this time against the humans, might redraw the territory lines far below the wall.
I don't think Valahan is interested in peace or allying with us.
So Valahan wants another war in order to add to their territory. They'd already seized more than their fair share after the war 500 years ago. They're bored, Moore said, frowning with distaste. And the humans, despite those queens, are far weaker than we are. Pushing into human lands is low-hanging fruit. Montessere and Rask are likely thinking the same thing. Cassian groaned skyward. That had been the fear during the recent war, that those three territories across the sea might ally with Hybern. Had they, there would have been no chance at all of survival. Now, even with Hybern's king dead, its people remained angry. An army might be raised again in Hybern, and if it united with Valahan, if Montessere and Rask joined with the goal of claiming more territory from the humans?
You already told Rhys this.
It wasn't a question, but Moore nodded. That's why he's asking you to look into what's going on with the human queens. I'm taking a few days off before I head back to Valahan. But Rhys needs to know where the human queens stand in all of this.
So you're supposed to convince Valahan not to start another war, and I'm supposed to convince the human queens not to do so either.
You won't get near the human queens, Moore said frankly. But from what I observed in Valahan, I know they're up to something, planning something. We just can't figure out what, or why the humans would be stupid enough to start a war they cannot win.
They'd need something in their arsenal that could grant them the advantage.
That's what you have to find out. Cassian tapped his booted foot on the stones of the walkway.
No pressure.
Moore drained her tea. Playing courtier isn't all nice clothes and fancy parties. He scowled. Long moments passed in amiable silence, though Cassian half heard the wind whispering over the Sidra, the merry chatter of the people around them, the clink of silverware against plates. Content to let him think, Moore returned to her sunning. Cassian straightened.
There's one person who knows those queens inside and out, who can offer some insight.
Moore opened an eye, then slowly sat forward, her hair falling around her like a rippling golden river. Oh? Vasa. Cassian hadn't dealt much with the ousted human queen, the only good one out of the surviving group who'd been betrayed by her fellow queens when they'd sold her to a sorcerer lord who'd cursed her to be a firebird by day, woman by night. She'd been lucky. They'd given the other rebellious queen in their midst to Adder, who had impaled her on a lamppost a few bridges away from where Cassian and Moore now sat. Moore nodded. She might be able to help. He leaned his arms on the table.
Lucian is living with Vasa, and Jurian. He's supposed to be our emissary to the human lands. Let him deal with it.
Moore took another bite from her pastry. Lucian can't be entirely trusted anymore. Cassian started.
What?
Even with Elaine here, he's become close with Jurian and Vasa. He's voluntarily living with them these days, and not just as an emissary, as their friend. Cassian went over all he'd heard and observed from his encounters with Lucian since the war, trying to contemplate it like Rhys and Moore would.
He's spent months helping them sort out the politics of who rules Prithian's slice of the human lands,
Cassian said slowly.
So Lucian can't be unbiased in reporting to us on Vasa.
Moore nodded gravely. Lucian might mean well, but any reports would be skewed, even if he isn't aware of it, in their favor. We need someone outside of their little bubble to collect information and report. She finished off her pastry, which would be you.
Fine, that made sense. Why haven't we already contacted Vasa about this?
Moore waved a hand, though her shadowed eyes belied her casual gesture. Because we're just now piecing it all together. But you should definitely speak with her when you can. As soon as you can, actually.
Cassian nodded. He didn't dislike Vasa, though meeting her would also entail talking with Lucian and Jurian, the former he'd learned to live with. But the latter? It didn't matter that it turned out that Jurian had been fighting on their side, that the human general who'd been Amarantha's tortured prisoner for 5 centuries had played Hybern after being rebirthed by the Cauldron and had helped Cassian and his family win the war. Cassian still didn't like the man. He rose, leaning to ruffle Moore's shining hair.
I miss you these days.
She'd been away frequently lately, and each time she returned, a shadow he couldn't place dimmed her eyes.
You know we'd warn you if Kyr ever came here.
Her asshole of a father still hadn't called in his favor with Rhys to visit Velaris. Eris bought me time. Her words were laced with acid. Cassian had tried not to believe it, but he knew Eris had done it as a gesture of good faith. He'd invited Rhysand into his mind to see exactly why he'd convinced Kyr to indefinitely delay his visit to Velaris. Only Eris had that sort of sway with the power-hungry Kyr, and whatever Eris had offered Kyr in exchange for not coming here was still a mystery, at least to Cassian. Rhys probably knew. From Moore's pale face, he wondered if she knew too. Eris must have sacrificed something big to spare Moore from her father's visit, which would have likely been timed for a moment that would maximize tormenting her.
It doesn't matter to me.
Moore waved off the conversation with a flip of her hand. He could tell something else was eating at her, but she'd let him in when she was ready. Cassian walked around the table and pressed a kiss to the top of her head.
Get some rest.
He shot skyward before she could answer. Nesta woke to pure darkness. Darkness that she had not witnessed in years now, since that ramshackle cottage that had become a prison and a hell. Jolting upright, hands clutching at her chest, she gasped for air. Had it been some fever dream on a winter's night? She was still in that cottage, still starving and poor and desperate. No, the air in the room was toasty, and she was the lone person in the bed, not clinging to her sisters for warmth, always squabbling over who got the coveted middle place in the bed on the coldest nights, or the edges on the hottest summer ones. And though she'd become as bony as she'd been during those long winters, this body was new too. Fey, powerful. Or it had once been. Scrubbing at her face, Nesta slid from the bed. The floors were warmed, not the icy wooden planks in the cottage. Padding to the window, she drew back the drapes and peered out at the darkened city below. Golden lights shone along the streets, dancing in the twining band of the Sidra. Beyond that, only starlight silvered the lowlands before the cold and empty sea. A scan of the sky revealed nothing regarding how far off dawn might be. And a long moment of listening suggested the household remained asleep. All 3 of them who occupied it. How long had she slept? They'd arrived by 11 in the morning, and she'd fallen asleep soon after that. She'd consumed absolutely nothing all day. Her stomach grumbled, but she ignored it, leaning her brow against the cool glass of the window. She let the starlight gently brush her head, her face, her neck. Imagined it running its shimmering fingers down her cheek, as her mother had done for her and her alone. My Nesta, Elaine shall wed for love and beauty. But you, my cunning little queen,
You shall wed for conquest.
Her mother would thrash in her grave to know that years later, her Nesta had come dangerously close to marrying a weak-willed woodcutter's son, who had sat idly by while his father beat his mother, who had put his hands on her when she called things off between them, who had then attempted to take what she hadn't offered.
Nesta had tried to forget Thomas. She often found herself wishing the cauldron had ripped those memories away, just as it had her humanity. But his face sometimes sullied her dreams, her waking thoughts. Sometimes she could still feel his rough hands pawing at her, bruising her. Sometimes the coppery tang of his blood still coated her tongue. Pulling back from the window, Nesta studied those distant stars again, half wondered if they might speak. "My Nesta," her mother had always called her, even on her deathbed, so wasted and pale from typhus. "My little queen." Nesta had once delighted in the title, had done her best to fulfill its promise, indulging in a dazzling life that had melted away as soon as the debtors swept in, and all her so-called friends had revealed themselves to be nothing more than envious cowards wearing smiling masks. Not one of them had offered to help save the Archeron family from poverty. They had thrown them all, mere children and a crumbling man, to the wolves. Nesta had become a wolf, armed herself with invisible teeth and claws, and learned to strike faster, deeper, more lethally, had relished it. But when the time came to put away the wolf, she'd found it had devoured her, too. The stars flickered above the city, as if blinking their agreement. Nesta curled her hands into fists and climbed back into bed. Cauldron, damn him. Maybe he shouldn't have agreed to bring her here. Cassian lay awake in his behemoth of a bed, large enough for three Illyrian warriors to sleep side by side, wings and all. Little in the room itself had changed in the past 500 years. Moore occasionally groused about wanting to redecorate the House of Wind, but he liked this room how it was. He'd awoken at the sound of a door shutting and been instantly alert, heart hammering as he pulled free the knife he kept on the nightstand. Two more were hidden under his mattress, another set above the doorway, and two swords lay beneath the bed and in the dresser drawer, respectively. That was just his collection. The mother knew what Az had stored in his own room. He supposed that between him, Az, Moore, and Rhys, in the 5 centuries they'd used the House of Wind, they had filled it with enough weapons to arm a small legion. They'd hidden and stashed and forgotten about so many of them that there was always a good chance of sitting on a couch and being poked in the ass by something. And a good chance that most of the weapons were now little more than rust in their sheaths. But the ones he kept in this bedroom, those he kept oiled and clean, ready. The knife gleamed in the starlight, his siphons fluttering with red light as his power scanned the hall beyond the door. But no threat emerged, no enemy breaching the new wards. Hybern's soldiers had broken through more than a year ago, nearly getting their hands on Feyre and Nesta in the library. He hadn't forgotten it. That terror on Nesta's face as she'd raced for him, arms outstretched. But the sound in the hall? Azriel, he'd realized a heartbeat later. That he'd heard the door at all told him Az wanted him aware of his return. Hadn't wanted to talk, but had wanted Cassian to know that he was around. Which had left Cassian here, staring at the ceiling, his siphons slumbering once more, and knife again sheathed and set on the nightstand. From the star's position, he knew it was past 3. Dawn was still far off. He should get some sleep. Tomorrow would be hard enough. As if his silent plea had gone out to the world, a smooth male voice purred into his mind.
"Why are you up so late?"
Cassian scanned the sky beyond the wall of windows, as if he'd see Rhys flying there.
I have the same question for you.
Rhys chuckled. I told you. I had some apologizing to do with my mate. A long, wicked pause.
We're taking a break.
Cassian laughed.
Let the poor female sleep. She was the one who initiated this round.
Pure male satisfaction edged every word.
You still didn't answer my question. Why are you snooping on me at this hour? I wanted to make sure all was well. It's not my fault you were already up.
Cassian let out a soft groan.
It's fine. Nesta went to sleep right after we got here and stayed in bed. I'm assuming she's still asleep. You got there before 11.
I know.
It's 3:15 in the morning.
I know. The silence was pointed enough that Cassian added,
Don't butt in. I wouldn't dream of it.
Cassian didn't particularly want to have this conversation. Not at 3 in the morning, and certainly not twice in one day.
I'll check in tomorrow night with an update on the first lesson.
Rhys's pause was again too pointed to ignore. But his brother said,
Mor will bring you up to Windhaven. Good night, Cass.
The dark presence in his mind faded, leaving him hollow and chilled. Tomorrow would be a battlefield unlike any other he'd walked onto. Cassian wondered how much of him would be left intact by the end of it. Chapter 5.
If you don't eat that, you're gonna regret it in about 30 minutes.
Seated at the long table in the House of Wind's dining room, Nesta looked up from the plate of scrambled eggs and steaming bowl of porridge. Sleep still weighed her bones, sharpening her temper as she said,
I'm not eating this.
Cassian dug into his own portion, nearly double what lay before her.
It's either that or nothing.
Nesta kept perfectly still in her chair, keenly aware of every movement in the fighting leathers she'd donned. She'd forgotten how it felt to wear pants, the nakedness of having her thighs and ass on display. Mercifully, Cassian had been too busy reading some report to see her slink in and slide into her seat. She glanced toward the doorway, hoping a servant might appear.
I'll eat toast. You'll burn through that in 10 minutes and be tired.
Cassian nodded toward the porridge.
Put some milk in it if you need to make it more palatable. He added, before she could demand it, There's no sugar.
She clenched the spoon. As punishment?
Again, it'll give you energy for a short blast and then make you crash.
He shoveled eggs into his mouth.
You need to keep your energy level constant throughout the day. Foods full of sugar or flimsy bread give you a temporary high. Lean meats, whole grains, and fruits and vegetables keep you relatively steady and full.
She drummed her nails on the smooth table. She'd sat here several times before with the members of Rhysand's court. Today, with only the two of them, it felt obscenely large.
Are there any other areas of my daily life that you're going to be presiding over?
He shrugged, not pausing in his eating.
Don't give me a reason to add any more to the list.
Arrogant asshole. Cassian nodded toward the food again.
Eat.
She shoved the spoon into the bowl but didn't lift it.
Have it your way, then.
He finished his porridge and returned to the eggs. How long will today's session be? The dawn had revealed clear skies, though she knew the Illyrian mountains had their own weather. Might already be crusted in the first snows.
As I said yesterday, the lesson is 2 hours, right until lunch.
He set his bowl on his plate, piling the silverware within. They vanished a heartbeat later, taken by the magic of the house.
Which will be the next time we eat?
He glanced pointedly at her food. Nesta leaned back in her chair. One, I'm not participating in this lesson. Two, I'm not hungry. His hazel eyes guttered.
Not eating won't bring your father back.
That has nothing to do with this, she hissed. Nothing.
He braced his forearms on the table. We're gonna cut the bullshit. You think I haven't gone through what you're dealing with? You think I haven't seen and done and felt all that before? And seen those I love deal with it too?
You aren't the first and you won't be the last. What happened to your father was terrible, Nesta. But
she shot to her feet.
You don't know anything.
She couldn't stop the shaking that overtook her. From rage or something else she didn't know. She balled her hands into fists.
Keep your fucking opinions to yourself.
He blinked at the profanity, at what she guessed was the white-hot rage crinkling her face. And then he said, Who taught you to curse? She squeezed her fists harder.
You lot. You have the filthiest mouths I've ever heard.
Cassian's eyes narrowed with amusement, but his mouth remained a thin line.
I'll keep my fucking opinions to myself if you eat.
She threw every bit of venom she could muster into her gaze. He only waited, unmovable as the mountain into which the house had been built. Nesta sat down, grabbed the bowl of porridge, shoved a lumpy spoonful into her mouth, and nearly gagged at the taste. But she forced it down. Then another spoonful. Another. Until the bowl was clean, and she started on the eggs. Cassian monitored each bite. And when there was nothing left, she scooped up her plate and bowl and held his stare as she dumped her dishes atop each other, the sound of the rattling silverware filling the room. She again rose, stalking toward him, the doorway beyond him. He stood as well. Nesta could have sworn he wasn't breathing as she passed, close enough that a shift of her elbow would have it brushing his stomach. She said sweetly, I look forward to your silence. Unable to help the smirk blooming on her mouth, she aimed for the door, but a hand on her arm stopped her. Cassian's eyes blazed, the red siphon tethered on the back of the hand that gripped her, fluttering with color. A wicked, taunting smile curved his lips.
Glad to see you woke up ready to play, Nesta.
His voice dropped to a low rumble. She couldn't help the thundering of her heart at that voice, the challenge in his eyes, the nearness and size of him. Had never been able to help it, had once let him nuzzle and lick at her throat because of it. Had let him kiss her during the final battle because of it. Barely a kiss, about all he could manage in his injured state. And yet it had shattered her entirely.
I have no regrets in my life but this, that we did not have time, that I did not have time with you, Nesta. I will find you again in the next world, the next life, and we will have that time. I promise.
She relived those moments more often than she cared to admit. The press of his fingers as he'd cupped her face, the way his mouth had felt and tasted, tingled with blood but still tender. She couldn't bear it. Cassian didn't so much as blink, though his grip on her arm gentled. She willed herself not to swallow, willed her surging blood to chill to ice. His eyes again narrowed with amusement, but he let go.
You have 5 minutes until we leave.
Nesta managed to step away. You're a brute, he winked.
Born and raised.
She managed another step. If she refused to leave the house, Cassian or Morrigan or Rhys would just haul her to Windhaven. And if she flat out refused to do anything, they'd drop her in the human lands without a second thought. The realization was enough to steel her further. Don't ever put your hands on me again.
Noted.
His eyes still blazed.
Her fingers curled once more.
She selected her next words like throwing knives.
If you think this training nonsense is going to result in you climbing into my bed, you're delusional. She added with a slice of a smile, I'd sooner let in a mangy street dog.
Oh, it's not going to result in me climbing into your bed.
Nesta snickered, victory achieved, and had reached the stairs when he crooned,
You'll climb into mine.
She whirled toward him, foot still suspended midair. I'd rather rot. Cassian threw her a mocking smile.
We'll see.
She fumbled for more of those sharp-edged words, for a sneer or a snarl or anything. But his smile grew.
You have 3 minutes to get ready now.
Nesta debated chucking the nearest thing at him, a vase on a little pedestal beside the doorway, but demonstrating that he'd gotten under her skin would be too satisfying for him. So she merely shrugged and walked through the doorway, slowly, utterly unaffected by him and his swaggering, insufferable boasts.
Climb into his bed, indeed. Those pants were going to kill him.
Brutally, thoroughly kill him.
Cassian hadn't forgotten the sight of Nesta in Illyrian fighting leathers during the war. Not at all. But compared to the memory,
Mother above. Every word, every language he knew had vanished at the sight of her striding past, straight-backed and unhurried as any noble lady presiding over her household. Cassian knew he'd let her win that round, that he'd lost the upper hand the moment she threw him that little shrug and continued into the hall, unaware of the view it presented, how it made every thought beyond the most primal eddy out of his mind. Settling himself required the entire 3 minutes she was downstairs. The mother knew he had enough to deal with today, both with Nesta's lesson and beyond it, without descending into thoughts of peeling those pants off her and worshipping every inch of that spectacular backside. He couldn't afford distractions like that. Not for a million reasons. But fuck! When had he last had a satisfying role in the sheets? Certainly not since the war.
Maybe since before Feyre had freed them all from Amarantha's grip.
Cauldron boil him?
It had been the month before Amarantha had fallen, hadn't it? With that female he'd met at Rita's, in an alley outside the pleasure hall, against a brick wall, quick and dirty and over within minutes, neither he nor the female wanting anything more than swift release. That had been more than 2 years ago. It had been his hand ever since. He should have scratched that particular itch before deciding that living in the house with Nesta was a good idea. She was hurting and adrift, and the last thing she needed was him panting after her, grabbing her arm like an animal, unable to stop himself from drawing near. She wanted nothing to do with him. She'd said as much at winter solstice. I've made my thoughts clear enough on what I want from you. A whole lot of nothing.
It had cracked an intrinsic piece of him, some final resistance and shred of hope that everything they'd endured during the war might amount to something, that when he spilled his heart out to her as he lay dying, that when she'd covered him with her body and chosen to die alongside him, she'd chosen him too. A stupid fucking hope, and one he should have known better than to harbor. So that winter solstice night on the icy streets, when he knew she'd only shown up at the townhouse to get the money Feyre had dangled in exchange for making an appearance, when she'd asserted that she wanted nothing to do with him, he'd thrown the present he'd spent months hunting down into the frozen Sidra, and then busied himself with quelling the growing dissent amongst the Illyrians. And he'd stayed away from her for the intervening 9 months. Far, far away. He'd come so close to making a stupid mistake that night, to laying his heart bare for her to rip out of his chest.
He'd hardly managed to walk away with some semblance of pride. Over his cold, dead body, would she do that to him again? Nesta emerged, her braided hair now coiled across the crown of her head like a woven tiara. He made a point not to look beneath her neck, at the body left on display. She needed to gain back the weight she'd lost and pack on some muscle. But those fucking leathers.
Let's go,
he said, his voice rough and cold. Thank the cauldron for that. On the veranda, beyond the dining room's glass doors, Moore landed, as if plunging from 30 feet above the wards was nothing. For her, Cassian supposed it was. Moore hopped from foot to foot, rubbing her arms and gritting her teeth, and gave him a look that said, "You owe me so big for this, asshole." Nesta scowled, but slung on her cloak, each movement graceful and unhurried, then aimed for where Moore waited. Cassian would fly them both out beyond the ward's reach, then Moore would winnow them to Windhaven, where he'd somehow find a way to convince Nesta to train. But thankfully, Nesta knew that she had to do the bare minimum today, which meant going to Windhaven. She'd always known how to wage this kind of emotional mental warfare. She'd have